welcome to the first podcast of 3-Bit. I'm your semi-host, Peter Boda, and with me I have...
Thomas Curtis.
Kyle Simmerly.
And we are 3-Bit, and we're all college students who are bored. So let's get this show on the road.
Let's talk about some video games.
Yeah, we like video games.
We do. That's the truth.
So let's start it off. I finally played Secrets of Monkey Island after a Steam sale last week for $5. It's pretty good. It still has its charms.
Okay, question though.
What?
You played the special edition.
Yeah.
Yes. Did you play in the new redone art style, or did you play in the old?
I played in the old
graphics.
Pixelated version because I sort of wanted to see, you know, how a game that's almost 20 years old plays today. And though there are some little quirks about it, like excessive clicking, like if you need to... there's a point in the game where you have to unlock a safe, and you had to click each time to say that you wanted to push, and then click on the safe again. So each of those would count as one.
Oh,
so
right.
That was kind of weird, but yeah, it definitely has its charm. I liked the pixelated, like sort of close-ups of the characters. Every once in a while, I would hit F10. By the way, that's really great about the special edition for Monkey Island. Being able to switch between the new redone version and the pixelated version instantly. It's pretty amazing to see the changes, but I enjoyed the style of the pixelated version much more than the special edition.
Did it bother you that it didn't have any voice acting?
No, not really. Every once in a while, I would go into the new version and see what the voices were, and they were voices I kind of didn't like.
Yeah.
So I kind of went back to it. But at the same time, I noticed that I wasn't really reading any of the lines in a particular voice for each character. It was just sort of my voice.
Yeah. I picked up the special edition when it came out as well. And I had played through Monkey Island a couple years prior. And in my head, that game is very dry and flat with the way it delivers its humor.
Yeah.
Because you don't have any voice acting and the sound design is minimal at best.
Yeah.
So when I bought the special edition, I was listening to the voice acting, and these actors were trying to give these lines flair and personalities and accents. It really bothered me.
Yeah.
Because the jokes just, they didn't work as well.
Yeah, because what they, I don't know, I think they sort of realized this after they did it, but the lines were written to be read, like, by someone at
heard,
a screen,
right.
not
yeah.
read out loud.
Yeah, I mean, I commend you both for diving into, like, the old school of video games, because, you know, I barely touch PC games, and I'm almost always on a console, but, like, hearing about you guys talk about it, and especially, like, trying to bring that old into the new, and trying to basically take what was written as something to be read,
right.
You know, there's, I've always felt that if you write something to be read, you know, it you can lose a whole lot as it translates to speech. Like, when a speechwriter writes something for a speech, they write it in a way that you almost don't recognize if you read it.
Yeah.
Because they've got pauses or, like, you know, dramatic emphasis or, you know, stupid crap like that.
Like,
and so, like, I've never even touched this game. I have no idea.
But
I bought it. I did buy it on that sale, but I'm one of those stupid loyalist Max people, and so I'm boot camp on my Tower Mac, and I don't have nearly enough hard drive space, and I've got to repartition. But once I do, and I can play it, I'll actually get a feel for it. But, like, just hearing about it, and it's an interesting, like, thing to talk about. Like, trying to bring something that was this almost iconic.
Yeah,
you know,
it's become kind of a, I don't know. Could it? We can't really say a cult following, because, you know, tons of people love this game. But
it's definitely
people
revered.
Love the original, and I think if you know, there are different like ways that you would try to bring it to the new age with this new edition. It's gonna like not everyone's gonna like it because they're gonna say, well, the original is, you know, what I had fun with trying to, like, take away the imagination of it in a way, with the voice acting, you know. Plus, I didn't really like the visual style that often.
Oh my god, the new visuals, to be honest, they almost enraged me.
Yeah.
When I first turned on that game,
nerd rage.
I mean, it's fine. You see Guybrush walk out from the back of the screen, and he goes up to the little old man, and he says, "Hey, I'm Guybrush, but I want to be a pirate," and you're totally on board with that.
Yeah.
But then you go down to the tavern with all the pirates,
right?
And you talk to them, and you see these close-ups that in the original game, while they're pixelated, they still look like
realistic like real people. Human. Like,
but you get this new style, and these people are all like stylized and angular, mm-hmm. and they're not even close to what the originals were like.
I know, that's the weirdest thing to me, is that it seems like they took the art styles from the later sequels and like tried to apply them to this game, which just didn't seem to work.
It really ruined the tone, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And, I mean, in some ways I commend LucasArts for doing this, but I feel like in a lot of ways they tried to stay too close to the original.
Yeah.
For example, like, soon after you leave that tavern for the first time, you start walking through the town, and there's that shady guy on the corner who's trying to sell you a map, I believe. And in the original Monkey Island, you know, it's a really low resolution, so there's a lot of pixels, and you don't see a lot of detail. And this guy sits there, and his head's gyrating back and forth while he's looking around all shifty-like.
Yeah.
And in this real game, or in the redone game, they have him do the exact same animation with his head twitching back and forth, and it looks like he's almost having a neck spasm.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't look right at all.
But at the same time, I think for them to be able to add in something like pressing F10 and going so seamlessly from the two games, it's sort of necessary for them to, you know, I guess. Maybe they could have changed it. I don't know. But yeah, I agree with you. It does look a little awkward.
Yeah.
Also, with the style, it almost looks like an old Disney game. It's sort of like
with the new style, you mean?
Yeah, I don't know. It just sort of felt weird. It didn't seem like the Monkey Island that it played.
Yeah.
Although, I should say that I played Episode 1 for Tales of Monkey Island before I played this.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, because on Friday, Telltale was giving away the first episode for free, and so I got that and played through it, and I guess maybe I'm like comparing the new version to the visual style Telltale uses, but I don't know, I think Telltale's was a lot better, even if, you know, they reused a lot of character models.
I definitely prefer Telltale's version of Guybrush to LucasArts' new version.
Yeah, definitely.
Even though, like, I'm not totally sold on the Telltale Guybrush's little goatee. It's kind of
Hot
Topic style.
It sort of, like, gyrates around, you know?
Does it?
Wait a second. How the frick does a goatee... Okay, I know I'm speaking out of ignorance here, but how does a goatee gyrate?
I don't know. Maybe it's just... it's like when he walks, it sort of, like, wobbles.
I'm picturing Leonidas and his massive cone. Like, his massive cone's, like, stash.
Yeah, it's sort
You're
of
talking Leonidas from 300.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. Anyway,
enough about beards.
Yeah, enough about beards. One last point I wanted to make about the special edition. First off, Kyle, you need to play it.
Obviously. You guys are ranting and raving about it. I mean,
yeah.
I think it's appropriate to mention the fact that obviously we saw Ron Gilbert at PAX this year.
Yeah, that's another reason why. That's probably the main reason why I wanted to play the game, is that after seeing that keynote at PAX, like, I felt... I don't know.
Like, let me say this. I've always felt like I'm almost betraying the roots of what this gamer culture kind of has cultivated itself to be, because people talk about, you know, I don't even know the names, but, you know, the Atari this, that, and the other, or, you know, this computer, or this, you know, this, that. And I don't know any of this stuff. In fact, so much of me sits there and thinks, oh, wow, who am I to call myself an enthusiast?
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't know any of this stuff. I don't know how, you know. Part of me wonders, should I go to a programming class to learn and understand some of the stuff they do?
Yeah, I sort of resonate with that in that I have an opportunity to play a lot of these games back when they were new. So going back and playing the special edition in the original form, it was sort of almost like a history lesson, like just going back and thinking of, you know, what sort of time period that was, and like, wow, you know, this really is a charming game, and it's got a lot of, it's really colorful, and like the, it's written well, so yeah.
Yeah, I feel like we almost did the special edition a little bit of an injustice, tearing it to shreds in terms of how it's presented, but the thing is, that game is fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Monkey Island is badass.
Yeah, I definitely.
It still holds up today very well.
From an outsider's perspective, though, because of when it was created, to me it sounds a little bit like kind of like a litgasm. Like it's about the writing. Like it's about the writing. It's about the engrossing of the storytelling rather than the playing of the game.
Most definitely. I mean, that's sort of what the point.
So like maybe that's why it endures.
Is about, isn't it?
I'm sorry.
Isn't that what the point and click adventure game is sort of about?
To me, in a lot of ways, it is. Yeah. But I feel like there's definitely a wonderful charm about playing those old LucasArts adventure games, because you sort of have to change the way your mind works in terms of logic, because you're being placed in these cartoony worlds where you're not going to solve puzzles the way you would in real life. Like, hell, you use a chicken with a pulley in the middle to solve problems in this game. That doesn't make any sense at all. But when you're playing Monkey Island and you're getting yourself engrossed in this weird little world, it totally makes sense.
Yeah.
And it's, I find it really fun to sort of put yourself in a different environment to try to kind of get, in a lot of ways you're getting inside the developers' heads and trying to figure out like how they want this world to work.
Most definitely.
And you're exploring this new reality. It's cool.
Yeah, without saying too much about the actual solving of the puzzles in the game, but for Kyle, when you do play it eventually, you want to, like, you want to think about every possible thing in your inventory, and, like, sometimes, you know, you have to throw out logic, because you are in this sort of cartoon world, and you like, anything, like, just try anything with everything.
Yeah, that a lot of the times becomes a problem with that kind of genre.
Yeah.
Like, I say I enjoy getting inside the developers' heads to a certain extent, but as soon as I hit a brick wall, those games can come crashing down very fast.
See, that's the thing. I'm sort of a baby, so when I got, like, first in Tails, there's a section in the jungle that you have to do, and I flat out, like, once I saw that, I was like, I don't know what the hell I'm doing, so I just looked up a walkthrough.
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah. And that's mostly to, I don't know, these days, I am a baby in one sense of the word, but just, like, to keep me going with the game and keep enjoying it, because I played that game, and I liked the dialogue between the characters.
Right.
Not so much like getting my mind bent by puzzles. So
oh, I see that.
Did you try it without doing a
walkthrough? Well, yeah. I definitely saw what I needed to do, and I sort of, you know, attempted it, and I think by blind luck I did find some stuff, but eventually I was just like, you know, screw this, I'm just gonna do it.
My experience when playing the first episode of Tales of Monkey Island was completely different, because a few summers before that I had forced myself to play through Secret of Monkey Island, Sam & Max, Full Throttle, and compared to Tales of Monkey Island, those games are fucking brutal.
Oh,
those puzzles
yeah.
can get so obscure. I would spend probably a half an hour walking around every environment, clicking on every object with every item in my inventory until something happened. In Tales of Monkey Island, they do a really good job of giving you these nice clues if you get stuck. Like, if you start walking somewhere you're not supposed to go, Guybrush will just say, maybe I should do such and such.
No, you're definitely right. It's a lot better in that sense. That was the only part where I needed a walkthrough, just because I saw that it was, you know, sort of a long puzzle, and like, so, you know, just get through it, and then so I can keep playing this game.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But they definitely do a great job of giving you clues of what you're doing right, And, you know, when you take a wrong turn, you're like, yeah, he definitely does say, maybe I should, you know, go over here.
Yeah, it's a really nice fix to a problem that, in my opinion, the adventure genre has been facing for a long, long time.
Yeah.
Like, a lack of a hidden system can totally just make those games a chore.
You know what this is
really
making me think of?
Yeah.
Random little piece. That awesome little blue line in Dead Space.
Yeah, definitely. Like, where you could just click the stick and it would show you exactly where to go.
Oh, Jesus.
That's exactly what those adventure games, in my opinion, I think they need them.
Yes.
Because as fun as those games are, sometimes you just want to be shown what to do so you can keep the game moving.
Sometimes I'm pissing my pants after those mutants are coming after me. I need to know where the hell I'm going.
Those mutants in Monkey Island?
Yeah.
Yeah, actually. It's Monkey Island.
Monkey Island. Dude, that should be a new sequel. Mutants of Monkey Island.
It's coming. Telltale Games, 2011.
Yeah, once we
heard it here first, 3-bit podcast.
Yeah, definitely. All right, I feel like we've run out of Monkey Island business to do.
What I could do is, I think something that you kind of harped on in the very last part, that was about, like, massive amounts of inventory, you know, this cartoony world where, you know, a pulley and a chicken can, you know, actually solve a puzzle, where you're doing all of these non-linear things trying to solve something, you know, solve an issue. I mean, it ties into the one game I get to talk about, which is Scribblenauts.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's really weird because, I mean, if you guys want to go on to something a little more pertinent.
Scribblenauts sounds pretty rad.
Definitely.
Okay.
Tell us about Scribblenauts, Kyle.
Scribblenauts, I will preface with, is not worth $30.
Really?
I don't think it's worth $30 because the most fun I've had out of that game is the start screen.
Oh, I've heard about this.
Like,
huh.
Go on.
Like, the whole thing about Scribblenauts is, I'm only about, there are, I think, 12 worlds. And,
how many are there?
Like, 12 worlds, and within the worlds, there are 15 puzzles about.
Okay.
That's an approximation. Okay. I'm not entirely sure. And I finished World 3. So I'm not that far in, so maybe I haven't seen the hardest of what they can throw at me. But most of the puzzles of what I see, it's not that you can't conceptualize how you would get the star, right? You know, your ultimate goal. It's actually like manufacturing the things that'll get you to do it. Like, for example, one of the levels was, I needed to pick 3 flowers, all of which were guarded by enemies, and I needed to give them to a woman in a basket.
Okay.
Yeah.
And these 3 flowers, you know, one of them was guarded by a bee, one of them was guarded by a piranha, and then one of them was up on a ledge. So the ledge is an enemy. I don't think that makes sense. But so there were these 3.
Ledge, man.
There were these 3 different, you know, things to overcome. And the way Scribblenauts, you know, kind of, it does the opposite of what you expect. I remember talking to you about this, Thomas, where you'd expect Scribblenauts to be about Rube Goldberg machines. You know, finding really odd, intricate ways with as many, you know, possible things to get to your objective. But it actually incentivizes you using as little items as possible.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
It's,
so, like,
do you get, like, a bonus multiplier?
You
if
get
you use
bonus
fewer
multipliers
items?
Because there's actually a par. There's a certain number of items you can use in a level. Now, you can go over it, sure, but you'll lose points.
Okay.
And points equal allers. Yeah, that's right, dollars without the D. Allers, and those help you buy, you know, little mini things, new worlds, stuff like that.
Okay.
And so you actually find yourself doing the opposite, which is, how can I overcome multiple obstacles with one object?
Yeah.
And so
that's sort of counterintuitive
exactly,
to
you
what
think,
they're advertising.
Exactly.
Like,
you
like,
think the
hey, look, you can do like 20,000 words and, you know, interact with them all and solve these puzzles.
At the same time, I think there's something to be said for finding one object to take down a bee, a piranha, and a cliff.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's actually really funny. So it's infuriating in the sense that you actually spend your time trying to figure out ways of circumventing multiple obstacles, and you'll spawn, you know, Cthulhu and see if it helps you destroy both the bee and the piranha, but then it ends up turning on the woman who wanted the flowers and
oh good
oh,
yeah
man.
You know bloodbath.
Wait, it turns on a flower?
No, on the woman who wants the
oh,
flowers.
Okay.
And but so I ended up just like, well, a piranha would probably lose to a crocodile, so I spawned a crocodile but put it on the land, and the crocodile, just cause the bee was closest to it and it was combative, it destroyed the bee. Then I put it in the water, and it destroyed the piranha, and then I could delete the alligator without having to worry about going into the water with the alligator.
I gotcha.
So
oh, yeah, yeah.
With one item, and again, this is totally counterintuitive to what I thought Scribblenauts was going to be about. You know, with one item, I circumvented two of the problems that I had to get past, and all of a sudden, I get two flowers, and then all I had to do is spawn a jetpack to get on top of
right.
on top of the ledge. And so, this is just indicative of what I've seen in the game, which is different. It's bizarre. It's not exactly
right.
What
it's
I
not
expected.
Exactly what you expected.
And I mean, that's that. I mean, so what? It's no big deal. It's interesting, but puzzles are frustrating for different reasons than I expected.
Yeah.
How so?
I have a question about the mechanics of the game.
Yeah, go right ahead.
Because when this game was, when it entered the spotlight during E3, it was coming from a developer that didn't really have much of a pedigree. Like, they had made, Drawn to Life on the DS, which was relatively well received. But they were shooting for something that was so extravagant. They were going to make, they're making a game where you can make anything and do anything you want. That's a tall order to fill.
Yeah,
when
exactly.
I first heard about this game, I was pretty much assuming that it was going to go down in flames because how could you possibly do that? And
yeah,
how do you think they actually succeeded in making the items work?
That to me is the success of it.
Really?
Because mechanics of gameplay aside, the fact that they followed through in pretty much all entirety with providing pretty much anything within the parameters they describe, which is no copyrights, no proper nouns,
okay.
no, you know, they can pretty much, I mean, my first, one of my first experiences on the loading, on the home screen was, I was like, okay, I'm going to spawn a dog. Now I'm going to spawn a pug. Now I'm going to spawn a Pomeranian. Now I'm going to spawn a husky. Now I'm going to spawn a collie. Like,
I have a question, though. You say, like, they succeed in doing all of these things. They have, you know, you can spawn all these breeds of dogs, mm-hmm. but those dogs aren't necessarily interacting in different ways.
What's the point? So it's interesting because they follow through in every sense of like they provide pretty much unique spawns in the world for whatever you type in. I mean, I've run into a couple of a couple of items that are, you know, describable by multiple names. Like, I typed in infinity and wormhole, mm-hmm. and I got the same thing. Or I typed in, another one was, you know, if you type in, if you type in shotgun, you get a shotgun. But if you type in dragon, there's an option for a dragon weapon, and it's the shotgun. So maybe that's a colloquialism, I don't know.
Yeah.
But, other than that, I mean, so that's what the weird disconnect about the game is, and that's why the most fun I've had with it is being on the home screen, where you're not getting hurt, and you're literally just testing the parameters of the game.
Okay, so it's
but
sort
that's
of
also
a
why
sandbox.
It's not worth $30 to me.
Okay, so
because it's a spawn engine to me, and it's more testing your imagination than actually, at least yet, for me. Maybe
right.
This is a little preemptive, because I need to go through more of the game. But, go ahead.
My question is, like, you described how you can spawn anything you want and it'll show up. But my question is, do they interact the way you, with the world the way you expect them to? Like, could you spawn something, let's say, a blender, put fruit inside of it, and make a smoothie or something?
Like, I actually have yet to test that. I did.
Well,
try.
I'm just saying in general. Like, when you spawn something, does it do what you expect it to do, or does it just pop out as a sprite that you can look at and watch it animate?
For example, I put a mouse in an oven, and all the people around me got a little scared face.
What is wrong with you?
Yeah, I needed to get rid of the mouse. There was an oven there.
I need to call PETA because this is fucking unacceptable.
I'm sorry.
Goddamn.
You know, little vapors above it. Oh. The chef next to me, like, oh my god.
Jesus Christ!
I
dude.
Had to
Why
get rid
you...
of the mouse.
I can't
dude,
believe you.
The other
used
option was the trash can.
You used the oven instead of like spawning
a cat
or something.
Why would you get a cat and just scared
Why
away?
Is
Why
that
you have
any more? Why is that any? You don't see the carnage. It just burns.
Oh God!
I don't know if I can be your friend anymore. That is a horrifying proposition.
All right, let me go back to what I was going to say.
Yeah, dude.
But yes, to answer your question, in large part, from what I've seen of interactions between things, they interact the way you'd expect. Like, it's a little bit bizarre. Like, for example, I needed to get a cow to safety.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, okay, I need to cross a ravine or whatever.
Okay.
So I spawn a helicopter and attach a net to the helicopter. Mm-hmm. Now, the net doesn't actually wrap around the cow.
Right.
You attach the the net via these little connector points to the back of the cow, and you just presume it's
weird.
Doing its job. It looks more like a stepladder that's connecting the
the
helicopter's treads to the back of the cow.
Right.
But so some things aren't perfectly animated, but they interact largely.
But they behave the correct way.
This was one of my favorite. I spawned God, mm-hmm. and then I spawned an atheist.
Naturally.
Of course.
Yeah.
The atheist got scared and ran away. And God chased him and, like, kept him in a corner.
Okay.
Making him realize his...
Trying to show him the light.
Exactly.
That's,
like,
that's pretty cool.
It was... There are so many parts of the game that you just can't realize... You just can't realize that they actually worked on all of these different possibilities.
Right.
But at the same time, I haven't gone far enough in the game to see the value of $30 in it.
Yeah, okay. So you like the idea that these things do interact with each other in, like, sort of a sandbox sense.
Yeah.
Like, you're doing this stuff in the menu.
Mm-hmm.
And so, in that sense, it's sort of like a Garry's Mod.
Yeah, very much. In fact, very much so. Where you can... One of my first experiences in PC gaming was Garry's Mod. I didn't even play Half-Life 2. I'm not even done with it yet.
The internet hates you right now.
Oh, trust me. I
started playing on PC. What a noob.
I welcome their wrath. I deserve it. But the first thing I ever did when I first started gaming on the PC side of my Intel Mac was I bothered Thomas incessantly to play on Garry's Mod with me. Because
weird.
I had no more fun than, like, spawning 25 of those towers, and Thomas is like, you're gonna kill my computer!
Yeah,
these are smokestacks that probably are, what, like 30 stories tall?
They actually fade up top if you, like, look straight from the bottom to
top. That was when you were using my shitty desktop. That was dying when you'd spawn more than, like, 20 objects at a time.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, I'd spawn, like, 500 balloons. And they'd be, like, up in the sky. And you're just like, oh my god. You're, like, trying to move. And you're lagging, like, every
You're at, like,
step.
3 frames a second.
Yeah, exactly.
So basically, you like to break computers.
You know, that's a really, really good comparison, though. Because Garry's Mod is something that is... begot out of another game. It's all these cool mechanics and ideas, but the game has left me wanting. Like, people have talked about being frustrated with it.
Uh-huh.
I've never been frustrated with what it's asking me to do. I've been frustrated with my inability to do it. Does that make sense?
You're frustrated at your own imagination?
Yes. Maybe that's it.
Terrible.
Maybe I'm
you're just too stupid.
You're
then.
Just
I guess
you're
I
just not
be
a child anymore.
What was one that I was actually really proud of? There was one that I was really, really proud of. Maybe I'll think about it later. But so that's in whatever time frame that was, that was my opinion of Scribblenauts. It's really fun to mess around in the sandbox.
Okay, so but Garry's Mod is like $10. Hasn't it always been around
$10?
Garry's Mod, they started charging for Garry's
Mod
at some point.
Yes.
They realized
so that's right. It was free at
were...
first.
Yeah.
So, in that sense, I can see what you're saying, that it's not worth the $30 if what fun you're having with it so far has been just in the menu.
Well, let's be fair. Garry's Mod and Scribblenauts are not the same game.
Sure. But I'm just thinking, like... How much fun have you been having in the actual levels that you've played?
A decent amount. Marginal, maybe, you'd say. I mean, there are some that I'm really kind of intrigued at how I pull it off. Like, there was the one where I had to get rid of some mice.
Mm-hmm.
And, like I told you about the logic of it, trying to incentivize less usage of things.
So you made an oven and you burned them all?
No. The oven was already there. It was in a kitchen.
There you go. So it's not that Kyle is terrible. It's just that he's actually
say.
Some sort of hippie.
They hate animals.
He's conserving objects.
You know, you mentioned blenders.
God.
I did try to put a mouse in a blender. It didn't work.
You've been watching too many terrible YouTube videos.
Yeah,
probably.
You need to stop
That's
being
horrifying.
On the terrible side of the internet.
I think we should
come back.
Talk about something else before I start
well,
crying.
Let me say. Go ahead.
I just wanted one last question about it, is the controls. I've heard a lot of complaints about how sort of twitchy things are, and like sometimes when you try to move your dude, you'll accidentally move an object or something, and he will be dumb and
you know,
kill himself.
You guys are talking about point and click. I mean, that's the mechanics behind this. Any interaction you have, you click on something and, you know, a menu comes up. There's a person, you click on them, you interact with them, you throw something at them, and you get those options. And in that sense, you're doing two things. You're clicking to move, and you're clicking with your stylus, obviously, to select to do things or move things. And so there'll be sometimes where you're trying to, say, an animal's attacking you, and you really want to get away. But the direction you tap, you accidentally pick up an item.
Yeah.
Or for example, you want to walk somewhere, or you end up, I think one of them was, I wanted to walk somewhere, but I ended up picking up something like the dog was guarding, and then the dog comes over at me and kills me.
Oh, geez.
You know, it's like, you can have these, like...
So, is that frustrating? Like...
A little bit. It does not detract significantly from my experience, especially because majority of my experience
has been
in the menu where I'm not worried about dying, where I'm not worried about... I'm just watching Cthulhu and wormholes.
Yeah.
And God. And I did kill God, by the way.
Yeah, you spawned two Cthulhus, right?
I killed God.
I'm sorry for any Christian listeners.
Yeah.
It could be any God. Maybe Christians should rejoice.
Oh, but whoa.
Yeah.
Let's not get into
that. Okay, yeah, let's move on.
This is not the podcast to get into that sort of talk.
But are you guys curious what killed him?
Well,
what killed God, Kyle?
The devil induced damage, and then Cthulhu finished him off.
Awesome.
So
I think I remember...
stronger than Christianity?
I guess so.
Okay.
I remember I spawned...
You heard it here first, folks.
Yeah. I remember you mentioned the dragon shotgun. I remember I spawned a dragon as well as that dragon shotgun, and then I gave God that dragon shotgun and had him shoot the dragon.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't work.
No.
Like, he shot it, and then it just stepped on him, and he died.
Dude, have you seen dragons? They're fucking huge.
You're not going to shoot a gun at a dragon. It wasn't that bad. It was, like, maybe two gods.
Okay, I'm going to say one more thing about Scribblenauts. I did not know what a Leviathan was until I played Scribblenauts.
What is it?
It's a sea serpent.
True. Oh, okay.
I had no idea. It's like, it basically looks like a basilisk. Not a basilisk. Gyarados.
A big-ass snake.
It looks like a Gyarados.
The Pokemon.
Pokemon? Awesome. There are Pokemon in Scribblenauts.
Buy it.
There's infringement afoot. Soon, Pokemon will get its revenge.
If you have 30 bucks to burn, if you have 30 bucks to burn, I have gained an enormous satisfaction out of just watching my imagination run wild.
Right.
But for those of you looking to watch your budget, I would presume this might go down in price, and maybe you could save a couple dollars. But it's been interesting.
Dude, speaking of saving a couple dollars,
uh-oh.
I played a game this week. It's only a dollar, and oh my god.
Wait,
what?
Geodefense Swarm?
This is for iPhone people only.
Oh.
But Geodefense Swarm on the iPhone is... amazing.
What is it?
Well, Thomas. Peter, have you heard of a tower defense game before?
What? So, like, a tower needs to defend itself from what?
In fact, the towers are the ones that do the defending of something else.
That's what
I'm saying.
Let me
break
it
down
for y'all.
What is it
defending against?
Okay. So, in Geodefense Swarm, it's set up with a...
I heard Geodefense.
I believe a...
Sorry, go ahead.
I believe it's set up with a hexagonal grid. I don't know my geometry.
Hexagonal?
Yes,
okay.
Six.
Yeah.
Hexagonal.
Okay, so you got a hexagonal grid, and on one end of the grid, there's a green gate. On the other side, there's usually a red gate. Mm-hmm. And enemies will come out of the green gate, and they will go directly towards the red gate. And your job
is to divert them?
Yeah, you get these different forms of towers that you can plant down on the grid by spending money. And the goal of the game is to just basically... find a way to prevent these enemies, or creep as they call them, from getting to the gate by making a maze to lengthen their path.
Mm-hmm.
And so the game's all about managing your budget and planting the most efficient amount of towers while still creating the longest path for these creep. And these towers, in addition to blocking the creep's path, they'll also automatically fire at them. This is probably old hat to anyone who's played a tower defense game, but hey, it's fun.
Hey, I'm interested. I have no idea what the hell you're talking about, so...
Well, anyway. basically, I bought this game on a whim on Tuesday.
Oh, yeah?
And on Wednesday, I think I had to spend a couple hours in the library before I had a class. I decided to start playing this game. I was pretty much late for class because I kept playing this.
You were that addicted to this iPhone game.
I wasn't even paying attention to the people around me.
Oh, wow.
Like, I was sitting in this little circle of chairs, and people were coming and going. I had tuned out the entire world. Yeah, I'd beaten a level that had taken me probably 20 minutes because they can get kind of lengthy. And I just looked around, and I was like, oh, my God. Where have I been for the past half an hour? Because I was so addicted to just planting these towers and making this efficient little path that would just mutilate these weak little enemies that were trying to get to this exit. Like, there's something to be said about creating a perfect path where not a single enemy will get into the red gate. And you feel like a master, like, war general or something planting these towers.
You are basically Napoleon, sir.
Yeah. Well, and in addition to just being amazingly fun to play, the game is beautiful. Like,
oh, is it?
Yeah, it looks a lot like the Geometry Wars games.
Oh, it does.
Yeah,
okay.
The enemies are basically just these little colored lines that make shapes.
Oh,
you know,
okay,
little Pac-Man
I gotcha.
Shapes and little figurates.
So it isn't like a sort of like monsters and
not at all.
These sort of three-dimensional
no.
towers. It's just like, it's 2D?
Yeah, it's completely 2D.
Okay.
And when you blow up a creep, they actually explode in little like lit particles like
okay,
they do in Geometry
yeah.
Wars.
Gorgeous. Absolutely gorgeous. Oh
yeah,
my God.
It's a phenomenal game, and it's only $1.
Actually, can you bust it out?
My phone is not in this room, but I will make sure to show you after we're done recording. But anyone who has an iPhone, do yourself a favor and pick it up.
It's a freaking $1.
It's really good.
Kyle, that means you.
I know. I already bought it. My freaking computer won't let me freaking put it on my iPhone.
What?
It's real. Like, I was like, Thomas showed me this. I played, like, one level.
Uh-huh.
And I was blown away because I had never really played any tower defense stuff. And it was really fun. And I was like, so how much is it? And Thomas is like, $1. I got up out of my seat and, like, sat down to my computer to make sure I could buy it.
Oh,
and
nice.
I bought it. And I don't know. My computer wouldn't let me put it on my iPhone. But
technical issues aside, it's really good. Play it if you get the chance.
Absolutely.
Well, like, sort of wish I had an iPhone to be able to play that.
Yeah, wait a second. But you know what I think was really funny about this segment's for iPhone users only. You, like, cut off, like, 75% of your listener base.
I don't
right
know.
There.
Maybe there might be more.
iPhones are sweet. Well, we have an exclusive little club.
Okay. Yeah, you two over here. Listen. I'm going to just chill with my original iPhone called the
Plus,
phone.
Plus, I'm not excluding iPhone Touch users.
The phone minus I.
They can play,
yeah.
too.
Huh?
iPhone Touch users, they can play, too.
That they could.
You
yeah.
know what? I don't want to.
You mean iPod
wanna,
Touch.
Yeah, you're crazy.
That's what I said.
The iPhone Touch is
don't
known as the iPhone.
iPhone.
Anyways, is there anything else you've been playing?
Nah, man, GeoDefense is badass. Actually, right. Wait. There is a game.
What?
It's a game about this really, like, indie band. They're from, like, the 50s, I think. They're
what?
Called the Beatles.
Why would you play old
what?
Music?
What?
Yeah.
What?
The Beatles? Like, they're
dude,
bugs?
I don't fucking know.
What the fuck is your problem?
You mean okay. They're not bugs?
I thought they were part of the insect kingdom. I don't, anyway, for reals, Beatles rock band, amazing.
Yeah.
I
think that's kind of anyone who's a fan...
Granted, I'm a huge Rock Band fan to begin with.
Yeah.
So any form of Rock Band, to me, is amazing. I also happen to be a Beatles fan.
Yeah.
So Rock Band Beatles, so
it's
far...
pretty amazing.
...has blown away every game I've played this year.
Yeah. When we played at PAX on the stage, it was kind of, you know, yes, this is Rock Band. Yes, this is the Beatles. This is exactly what I want. I'm playing Beatles on Rock Band. This is great.
Well, In fact, true story... Once this is done recording, we probably will play another hour or so of Rock Band or Rock Band Beatles.
I hope so.
I'm actually playing it right now.
You know, I think
damn,
it's really
dude,
funny.
Jealous.
I just have to mention here, I have seen about 50% less of Thomas since he got
oh, really?
Rock Band. Like, all of a sudden, like...
So if you ever want to get rid of Thomas, just lead him to Beatles Rock Band.
Give me a Beatles Rock Band set, and I'm fucking out of your life.
Oh, man.
Oh, man.
And that iPhone game.
Yeah, that and GeoDefense, and I'm set for life, man.
Yeah.
But the thing about that game is I've heard a lot of people sort of whine that there's only 45 songs in the game as opposed to Rock Band 1 and 2's roughly 80 each.
Right.
But the thing is, in Rock Band 1 and 2,
how many
I'm
do you
really
want
hard
to
pressed
play?
To think of around about 30 songs that I go back to over and over again.
Right.
The thing is with the Beatles, they have such a timeless catalog that going back to any of the 45 songs is always a joy. Even going back to songs that aren't that fun to play on the on like a guitar or drums, they're just fun because they're so amazing to listen to. And Harmonix has done a great job upping the visuals in this game. They have these dreamscapes when you play the songs that the Beatles recorded in the studio.
Right.
Where they just... There's like fucking drug trips, and it's they're amazing.
Yeah.
And like...
The art direction in that game is really,
like, I don't
really
want to sound like too much of a fanboy, but they're almost kind of like works of art sometimes.
Rock Band Beatles, my anti-drug.
Hey, man.
It works for me. It can work for you.
You know, I've actually got a question, though. How much of your enthusiasm for returning to all the songs, and it's a small catalog. I felt, you know, when you actually played through it, I've made an enemy of the internet, but now I'm going to make an enemy of all the Beatles fans. I didn't really like the Beatles.
Oh.
Before you
stabbed the game or after?
Before. They were old hat. I didn't really care. You know, I knew they were important in a historical sense, but, you know, there were only a couple of their songs I heard and liked. And then I recognize a whole bunch of their stuff just because it...
That's another thing that's amazing about the game is if you're a vocalist,
the game's
I really
amazing.
Like, you know... 80% of those songs from the beginning.
I keep saying it. The game's amazing because, you know, usually when you're playing Rock Band, it's sort of a struggle to get someone to sing because, you know, how many songs in Rock Band do you actually know by heart?
Yeah.
If you know the Beatles, like, at all, even if you know a couple songs, you probably already, you know, they're easy songs to learn.
Everyone knows A Hard Day's Night, 8 Days a Week. Like, they're just ingrained into our culture at this point.
Mm-hmm. Except, back to the idea of the question I was going to have, your ability to return to these songs, how much of it is incentivized by the award system?
The achievements, you mean?
The achievements, yeah.
Ooh.
It plays a factor.
Yeah.
Is that so?
I won't lie. I spent probably 2.5 hours playing that game last night to earn achievements.
You were inflating your EPing. We know.
Yeah.
Hey, man.
What is this? You compensating for something?
That'll number next to my game. What?
We weren't going to talk
you
about
heard
that,
me.
Peter.
What?
We weren't going to talk about it.
You mean we... Oh, shit.
This is
sounding
very wrong right now.
Of course.
Anyway, I like Gamerscore. That's true.
Yeah.
But...
I'm just doing this to be a dick. Because I know you've...
I know.
You have proven to me beyond a doubt that... I mean, I had never seen you so encaptured by something... Like a video... Like any video game I'd ever watched you play. Like, you were... were like a 5-year-old on Christmas when you got Beatles Rock Band. It was it was almost the sweetest thing I'd ever seen. Like, you were so excited.
You two are having a moment.
Like, no, I'm quite serious. I mean, you probably would have seen the exact same, excitement.
I see what you're saying.
And it also comes back to the fact that even your mom, who I've never, you know, had any experience with ever caring about the video games you're playing, is like, she knew the release date. Of Beatles Rock Band.
Yeah,
and
when that came out,
she
was telling
home.
Me, like, so are you going to get that Beatles game that comes out on September 9th?
Yeah, that's what's wild. This is, like, almost, you know, in the casual sense, this is, like, mom's, like, this is the game for moms, in a sense.
It definitely does appeal to the baby boomer generation, but at the same time, like...
No, it appeals to
I'm
like,
not a mom,
many
and that game
people.
Is pretty good.
I got
but
on
at the
my
same
fingers,
time,
and
like,
I'm the one who usually plays these things. I can't imagine parents being able to casually pick it up. But
I think an older
person
could totally
more like
pick
the singing
game.
Sense.
Really?
Yeah. Well, Rock Band Beatles is by comparison compared to the other rhythm games, it's really easy. Hmm. Especially if you were to tone it down to something like easy difficulty, and they have the no fail option right at the instrument select screen. It's just a button press away. Anyone can pick up that game and try to play it, and you'll catch on soon enough. And plus, singing vocals for anyone is probably going to be a blast because you know the song, and that goes a long way. But one thing that bothers me about that game to no end is the final song.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
before that game came out, Harmonix was trying to keep it hush-hush, like there was going to be this big... Epic finisher, like every other rhythm game has ever had. You know,
I know.
You have
and we
Free
were all
Bird
thinking,
and Guitar Hero. You've got
we were
Bark
all
of the Guitar Hero
thinking,
One.
Hey Jude.
I was hoping for Hey
song.
Jude because that's one of
that
my
song is
favorites.
Amazing, and they could have done such an amazing, like, you know, visual standpoint.
Instead, we only get the end, which is a 2-minute song
at
from
the end of
Abbey
Road,
I believe. And it doesn't do it. You get a quick drum solo, quick guitar solo, and it's basically done.
It is the most anticlimactic end I've experienced to a game. I mean, quite seriously, Hey Jude is probably one of the only Beatles songs that I was in love with. And I wasn't a Beatles fan. Like, I just... Yeah. The most exposure I'd had to the Beatles was, you know, just the standard timeline everyone knows. And Across the Universe, which is, by the way, a movie both of you should see. It was really awesome. It was the Beatles placed on top of an epic romantic story. Kind of hallucinogenic. Maybe you'll see it high. A couple of people recommended me that it's not nearly as good unless you're smoking something. Anyway.
At your local movie retailer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Anyway, I've forgotten what I was talking about.
The end.
Fuck the end.
All right. It was an
anticlimactic ending. I couldn't believe this was the last song. And you told me a really interesting thing. There was a poll on Twitter.
They had a poll that said, which of these songs do you think will be the final song in Beatles Rock Band? They listed Help, they listed Hey Jude, they listed Let It Be, I think, and they listed one other song that was not the end.
And so
they finally revealed the final song as being none of those four choices. I don't know. Personally, I felt betrayed because I wanted Help
plus,
and Hey Jude. I like those songs.
Plus, Abbey Road, isn't that a download pack
Abbey Road
coming
is coming
up?
Out as DLC on
right.
September 20th.
So
or October
why,
20th, sorry.
Why did they even add the end to...
I'm not sure. The
weirdest
thing is...
It's just a weird
when you get Abbey
decision.
Road, you know, in that album, like, the last several songs are meant to be played as, like, a single medley, just one continuous track, right?
Right.
The end is part of that.
Yeah, exactly.
So
that's what I was
saying. A small sliver of that as your finale to the full game, that seems really lame to me.
You've touched on something that I think is really important in this view. I think... Did you see the results of the poll?
It was just a little casual Twitter thing.
I'm curious as to what their marketing team pulled from that market research.
Yeah, maybe they...
And you've mentioned this. I think this might be on top of all the plastic instruments that Harmonix has introduced to us over the years, and the amount of money they've been raking in, I think that Hey Jude might be one of those songs they jack the price up on.
That might happen, but...
Possibly.
I know they're releasing the remaining tracks from Abbey Road for what is the equivalent of around $16.
Okay.
I might be wrong, but they've released some, like, Foo Fighter albums, like full albums and whatever, for $20. So they're not totally gouging us on the album prices just yet, as far as I can tell. But yeah, I am worried that maybe when they start releasing singles, it can get a little painful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, you should know. You've got a library of 200 to 300 songs on Rock Band.
Yeah.
That's not good for my finances, but hey, I like it.
It's awesome.
All right. Well, aside from somewhat disappointing end, anyways, the Beatles Rock Band is good. If you have any interest in the Beatles or Rock Band, you should probably play it.
Or even Beatles and Rock Band.
Or
OMG.
Well, no. It's not for them. This game isn't for them.
If you like video games and the Beatles, Beatles Rock Band is an abomination.
Yep.
Is what I meant to say
before. That's what I was getting at. Anyways.
So how about them Halos games?
What?
I've heard those are popular among the kids.
Those damn kids.
I don't have kids.
You know, the schools that you hang out with.
You didn't know?
What?
It's...
Oh, Jesus. I thought this was a dream. Anyways. ODST,
Peter.
Guys.
Fuck!
Sorry. ODST came out this week, and I have to say, I bought it on release, and maybe it was kind of for the wrong reason. I bought it to get a $10 gift card at Best Buy so I can buy other games for cheaper. I know,
let's
that doesn't make sense.
Let's break this down for a second. American dollars.
Let me explain.
Said Best Buy. Now, I'm going to strike a deal with
No.
If you give me back $10...
What?
I would be very happy.
I will not.
And they threw in this whole game as a side bonus.
No. See, I was thinking of getting this game regardless.
Okay.
But having that $10 gift card kind of, you know, helped with me wanting it sooner.
Okay.
Um,
fair enough.
because this is something I would probably have bought anyway. But yeah, so it came out. I guess, I mean, I beat it last night after picking it up on Tuesday, and so...
Last night being Thursday, because this will not go up when we are recording.
Right. So, yeah, I beat it a couple days after it came out. So I want to hear your guys' opinion of what you have played of the single player so far.
I guess I'll jump in. So I tortured myself these past couple of days because I had an essay to write, so I had to keep the paper in. I had to keep the game in shrink wrap, but I finally got to break it open this morning. I got to play the first two chapters. You meet the rookie, and then you have
spoilers incoming. Apparently,
how so?
What?
If you're gonna start talking about the story,
about like when you're in, like, so basically you're dropped into this hub world.
I'm purely talking about those beginnings of chapters. The rookie,
I'm so confused,
and then
right now.
The main guy, or the guy voiced by Nathan Fillion.
That's what I'm saying. So you were in a hub world, and then you found these beacons that initiated these missions, right?
Okay, let's break it down. The game is set up where you have this open hub world where you play as this marine, the rookie, who goes around this area, and he finds these items that trigger these flashback moments where the player's control is transported to another character where they play out a mission that happened sometime in the past, and you're trying to piece together this mystery about what happened when these Marines dropped into the city and everything went haywire.
Right, and usually at the end of those missions, it ends with whatever beacon being, like, put into its place.
Yeah, you see where the item that you found originated from,
right,
basically.
Right, exactly.
Oh, okay. I didn't understand what the hell you guys were talking about.
So how many
beacons?
How many flashback experiences have you gone through?
I've only gone through one.
Okay.
In fact, I'm stuck on the first.
All right.
So I've basically done the tutorial.
So you play through the
helmet.
Buck flashback.
Yes.
Okay.
Right, okay.
And I'm not even done with it.
All right.
That was the name I was trying to think of. The
Buck. So anyway, what did you think of it?
I'm a Halo fanboy. Uh-huh. Halo was the first FPS I ever played. And so their
again, the internet's like, oh my god.
Yeah. This is going to turn out bad if, like, every episode Kyle just lists off stuff that angers everyone.
So I've never played Mario.
Yeah.
Luckily, I have. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thankfully, he is a Mario Galaxy fan.
Yes.
Anyway.
Let's just cut that off.
Okay, sorry.
But, so, you know, they're feeding me things I'm already interested in.
Right.
The thing that was interesting right on the off was the way the game began, which was very cinematic and designed.
The first cutscene.
I mean, the first cutscene, and please, folks, you know, turn off the lights, watch this thing. It was really, really enjoyable. It was really... Stop fapping! What the fuck? Anyway.
Awkward moment.
Hey, he started it.
I don't know what you're talking about.
It's something that you can get enveloped in. It really sets up nicely, and in fact, when there is one part of the game that I don't know about for you, that opening cinema scene that I don't know about for you guys, but actually felt artistically very much like BioShock to me.
Huh.
In what sense?
I don't want to, like. I guess.
I think we can spoil the opening cutscene.
Okay.
That's
so
probably easily
spoilers
found
mentioned,
on game
but so you get
YouTube.
In the pod. And you're weaponless. You are totally vulnerable, and you're sitting yourself watching yourself plummet to the earth.
Right.
And it reminded me so much of your ascension or descension into Rapture.
In the bathosphere.
In the bathosphere. When the lights are out, you see this really creepy figure destroy this person in front of you, and all of a sudden is ripping into you. It reeled me in. I was really, enthused and excited about
the
playing.
First cutscene is really, it does a great job of like, okay, yes, this is something I'm interested in. Let's go.
Yes, absolutely. And then I hit the ground, and it is essentially like Halo 1 to me.
What do you mean by it felt like Halo 1?
You've now got that health meter.
Health system is back to what it used to be.
Halo 3 and Halo 2, I felt very, very powerful. And I didn't remember that from Halo 1. I remembered feeling much more like a standard soldier. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, before we stray too far away from that opening cutscene, my opinion, or my perspective, is kind of the opposite of you guys. I didn't like it.
At all?
Huh.
At least, right up until the point you get into your drop pod, I thought it was very flat.
Hmm. Well, yeah.
All you basically you see these characters that are voiced by the actors from Firefly, which is a show that I love. So that was kind of a cool little fanboy moment for me. But looking at it as its own isolated thing, it was really boring. Like, you get this Nathan Fillion looking character who goes and, oh, you get there's some romantic tension between him and his boss, and you get to see, like, oh, you got Marine number one, Marine number two, and Marine number three. You don't really get a whole lot of personality out of any of them. And you're just like, all right, guys, let's get down to business. You hop in your pod, and then it goes, and I didn't give two shits about any of those guys.
Yeah,
maybe they could have all been slaughtered the scene after, and I wouldn't have shed a tear.
But that's the thing. I should specify, and I think this is what Kyle and I were talking about specifically. It was once I was shot out of the pod, and you see, you know, all of these other ODST drop pods. That's
drop
when I was like, okay,
is nice.
this is great. This looks really cool, and then what happens afterwards, that's when I was drawn in. That first scene, exactly the same for me. I was like,
okay,
well, that was pretty generic and bland. Like,
To me, what I saw in that first cutscene was unique.
Okay.
I had never seen it done in a Halo game before. Hmm. Nothing to the extent that, you know...
Are you referring to
the Nathan Fillion
dude talking to
the
people?
Attempt at voice acting, the attempt at trying to create... very important multiple characters.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
You can talk about it as a starting point, and yes, if they died then, you might not care, but it really opens the curtains. And that's what I really felt was important about it. You get it.
Like, it shows their commitment to, you know, these characters to try to flesh them out.
Exactly. It's different.
Saying?
I mean, we've been on the bridge of ships hundreds of times in Halo, and we've seen captains interact with...
nameless
captains. We've seen Cortana talk to
people,
but none of it had felt as a coordinated attempt at concentrating on multiple different people. And so, this is not, you know, the tragedy where you start to shed a tear because you lost your friends.
Okay.
But to me, that uniqueness of it, especially sealing it with the drop sequence, I was just totally ready and excited.
Okay.
Yeah.
The thing is, though, like, the way you're looking at it, within the Halo bubble.
Okay.
When I was watching that scene,
I was looking at it compared to other games.
Hmm. Like, when I think of amazing introductions to a first-person shooter, I think of Half-Life 2, when you first get off that train, and you're placed into this just...
Yeah,
depressing world. You feel so oppressed the minute you step out of this train, and you're getting your picture taken, and there are these... just horrible, like, sad-looking people everywhere, and the Combine are pushing you around, telling you to pick up trash, like...
Pick up that can. Pick it up.
Exactly.
Before you can even go through the door.
That gets to me, like, at an emotional level.
That was...
But seeing Marines talking, like, all right, guys, let's go kick some ass, do our mission, like, that's just, like...
Yeah.
Pretty standard.
I've seen that.
You know, I was surprised, mm-hmm. and you mentioned this too, that at the off, they hand you your weapon, there was no tutorial sequence in the bridge.
Yeah.
And you said when you first played this opening sequence, wait a second, I don't get to explore the bridge. Like, that had been kind of a standard thing. And that would have been an opportunity. That would have been an opportunity where you have those interactions. You get a bearing.
I see what
you get a bearing for it.
That's something I didn't actually realize when it happened, because I don't know, I figure for this game they expect Halo fans to buy this.
Yeah.
Halo fans know what the hell to do. So, you know, they're not going to, like, pussyfoot around. They're just going to be like, all right, bitch, you're getting dropped. But, yeah, something, going back to the characters, did you notice, because this is something I noticed throughout, sort of a more exaggerated approach to the characters, like, sort of in the way that they interact with each other and sort of move?
Like their animations and such?
Yeah.
I did notice that in the opening cutscene.
Okay.
This is one scene in particular where, like, I think his name is Romeo. He's talking about using a sniper rifle
right.
in a Covenant ship, and he's, like, bouncing all around while he's holding this thing. I was like, oh, that looks a little,
yeah,
a little silly.
Okay. Yeah, so Fillion's character.
Uh-huh.
Help me with the name.
Buck.
I knew it started with a B. When Buck hands that guy the sniper rifle, I thought that was weird.
I believe that's the scene I'm talking about.
Yeah, it is, exactly, and he reacts to it. But my reaction was to when he handed him the sniper rifle, it seemed like, it seemed so,
okay.
Just putting it in his hands and it just clicked in place.
Yeah.
Like, it seemed so,
oh,
like,
yeah, yeah.
Exaggerated.
So
like, what?
Like, stiff, you mean? Or
stiff, exaggerated, calculated, it didn't, you know, I see where you're getting, I'm trying to help, I'm probably not. But
yeah, I'm just thinking, like, maybe we should move on past talking about
absolutely.
An opening cutscene.
Considering
for a game
that, it
that
is
doesn't
a whole
really,
game.
Yeah. So, like, what did you think of that you actually played, like, the gameplay aspect?
My first experience, I was really confused.
Okay. I think that's sort of what they were getting at.
Maybe, but, like, you have your health depleted, and they tell you how to replenish it. And I had no idea that, you know, where the health pack was. What was my health? Like,
oh, okay.
You know,
it's sort of ambiguous.
Confusing things like that. And then all of a sudden I got my health pack, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they stopped talking to me. And when we were talking about the little blue line, I was really confused for a second. I was like, wait a second, where am I supposed to go?
Did you,
help me. I need
did
to know
you
where
realize
to go.
That you could hit up on the D-pad?
They eventually tell you, but you have to get
do.
To a checkpoint
okay.
that tells you that.
My bad.
And so I was really confused for a second.
I personally loved that.
Yeah, I liked it.
In games nowadays, you're told what to do every 2 feet. It felt so cool to, like, just be led on your own, and you're just... They're trying to establish this atmosphere of you losing your bearings and trying to figure out what's going on. And for some reason, just removing a little tooltip that's telling you where to go really
so
delivers
much.
That point.
I remember watching, because I had played through this morning, and I watched you play it this afternoon, these first couple of sets, and I was so surprised that you just hopped to it. And I just had remembered my trepidation. I'd seriously sat there and, okay, when's the next pro tip? Like, it was like, come on. Huh. And,
well, my natural inclination is just to start wandering around and hitting things until something happens. I do
hitting
that
things?
Too.
Like
great.
Punching things?
Yeah.
He literally jumped.
That's basically
also,
how you go about life, isn't it?
It's true.
Also,
it works pretty well.
I jumped straight into heroic because I must have thought I'm incredible. I moved so slowly.
Oh, really?
And Thomas started off just trying to get his bearings by doing normal, not because he couldn't do heroic, but just because he was
that's
trying
what
to
I
enjoy
did too.
Himself. And so,
I like easy games.
And it was that probably helped a little bit, but like, on the off, he runs into a brute and four grunts that nearly killed me, and I hadn't known they were coming. You know, I just learned what the visor was.
Yeah, exactly.
And all of a sudden I hit it, and there was this red blob, and I'm like... Shit.
Exactly. That's what I really liked about this game. Not having a radar helped build the atmosphere
definitely.
Of, like, where should I be
agreed.
Going? And, like, where are these enemies? Like, I don't know, is it okay to, like, go into, like, my thoughts of the game later on?
Yeah,
or
please.
Sort of,
yeah,
just
so long as
I'm not going to spoil anything, but, just, like, in terms of, like, you can hit the... When you're going to a beacon, there's the compass that shows, you know, where the next beacon is
right.
and how far away it is. But then when you've got your, you know, you click in on the visor with X and then you're in this sort of Tron atmosphere with all these like
colored lines
everywhere
and
and like it highlights weapons and health and stuff. Going through that and like highlighting enemies, going through that, seeing where the beacon is in the general direction, and then seeing these enemies, my first inclination, which is completely different from any Halo game I've ever played, was to sort of figure out how I can get past them without shooting them.
That's exactly what I did, because I remember encountering this area a little bit after the first flashback, where there's this big open courtyard that's full of patrolling squads of enemies, and I remember just sitting back and pulling out my binoculars and just scouting out their patterns. And
there are binoculars?
Yeah, if you zoom in with a weapon that doesn't have a scope,
oh, okay.
you have binoculars.
Oh, yeah. Of course.
And so I was able to find a path to avoid all these patrols without alerting a single one. And I would never do that in Halo 3 or something.
Yeah.
And that felt really cool.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I remember one of the first things I heard about ODST ostensibly, was the fact that you cannot just jump in. You are to a measurable extent much more vulnerable. And the fact of the matter is it incentivizes looking for different, you know, pathways, means.
Yeah, I think the thing is, it's, they claim that you're more vulnerable. I haven't noticed that to a huge extent, but they make you, the atmosphere makes you feel that way, so you behave as if
you're
vulnerable. Yeah,
it's almost like they build up.
You know, I recognize that because you have the stamina sense. You don't have a bar that tells you how much shield you have. You just have basically a bleed out look.
Yeah.
Where all of a sudden, if your stamina is depleted, you're bleeding out, but you've lost no health.
And well, that's the thing. If you keep getting hit, there's a bar at the top. That's your health.
Yeah, no, I understand that. Okay. I understand that. But what I'm saying is, you can have this really bled out screen.
No, yeah.
Without having lost any health, and that made me.
That scared me.
Yeah,
like,
definitely.
When that happened, because Call of Duty does this, and when that happens, you're about to die. And so, like. My incentive is like, oh shit, I need to get to cover because I'm about to die, and then I'd realize, oh wait, I've still got full health, you know? And another thing, the way they do that is your guy sort of pants in sort of weird ways. Like, I didn't like
him
panting. Like, well, he just sort of goes like, I was like, you should probably get healed up, buddy.
Oh.
Yeah, it's a temp- you know what? It's interesting drawing like a corollary to COD. Because,
not looking, the fish, the game.
Yes. Call of Duty. Thank
People
you.
People know this.
Come on, Thomas. A little more
myself.
Credit to our audience. But, that aside, like, literally, the extent of the loss of stamina, the bleed out,
yeah,
is almost exactly like when you're about to die in COD. And that, it, like... You in COD you have like the heavy breathing, the labored breathing, the bled out screen, but in Halo you're nowhere near that, and it totally changed my psychology how to approach the game. You're absolutely right. Like I would hide behind something thinking, oh shit, and then you're back and you're like, oh sweet, I didn't lose any health.
Yeah, and in that way, I think it helps with the meticulous approach of like getting around enemies. I should say. I shouldn't give it too much credit in that I didn't play this as a stealth game at
it's
all.
It's certainly not one.
What I did do was, like, usually I'm... When I did try to do stealth, I sometimes did it poorly because the enemies seem to spot you pretty easily.
Oh, really?
And so sometimes I'd just end up, like, hiding behind cover and trying to, like, flank them or something. Mm-hmm. The only time I... Well... One of the most memorable times of actually sneaking around an area was when I got caught in a fight with two hunters that were in some area, and I was trying
to
find... I
think I remember that exact part.
Yeah. So I was trying to find my way around, like, how is there any other way I can get around to get to this beacon? Eventually, I did, like, find a way, but, man, yeah. It's nice that... They gave you the option. Like, you don't have to face every enemy. There are some, you know, in this map, there are some other alternate ways of getting to places you need to go.
Yeah, it's definitely a nice change of pace. Though I did find the flashbacks to be awfully reminiscent of Halo 3 proper.
Yeah, so basically, there's this hub world, which is what I would say is the new stuff.
Sure.
With quotation marks. Because
and that introduces new mechanics and
well,
stuff
yeah,
like, that.
Like they change things in which that sort of changes the way you play. In the flashbacks, it's pretty much Halo and like firefights and stuff like that.
Yeah, the big open areas with vehicles and
yeah,
mayhem.
And, like points in the level where you have to just, you know, kill dudes for a while until it's like, all right, move on.
You know,
but in that sense, like, that's still fun to me.
Oh,
like, having
no
more
doubt.
Halo, it's still really
yeah,
fun.
No, I was going to mention, the bleed together is, it permeates all of Halo for me.
What do you mean?
I have a really hard time sometimes. There was a level where, there was a part where you were kind of in a desert-y, rocky wasteland with all this grass. Mm-hmm. And I seriously, all of a sudden, pictured probably scenes from all three of the Halos.
Huh.
Yeah, and that icon, you know, that kind of iconic setup, like, I find it funny that even though the games bleed together and even though I find myself wanting to remember where certain things came from, at the same time, like you said, it's more of what
I want.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So even though it's not unique, it's still
unique. Amazing. Let's not say it is it's just this, you know, rehashed.
Well, it's not rehashed, but it's definitely like expansion. Like,
it feels
if you want more,
familiar.
Yeah, yes. If you want more Halo 3, you should probably get this because
agreed.
It definitely satisfies. After playing through this, I'm definitely interested in Halo Reach and to see how they actually change that up.
I would love to know what that is.
I don't know what it's about.
All they've said is that it's a first-person shooter.
Is it
and
based
that
on the
supposedly
book?
Coming out.
Supposedly.
Yeah, so it's supposedly going to take on the story of the fall of Reach.
Okay.
And so
that's where some
what you can assume,
get their shit wrecked.
Yeah, exactly. Wrecked. That's what we can assume is that there's going to be maybe a squad of Spartans. And, like, you know.
It'll be interesting. That's something to keep an eye on.
I really want Bungie to stray away from their traditional Halo formula.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Do you think it'll become tired?
That's what I'm worried about, is because this is supposedly coming out in 2010.
Yeah.
And so, you know, after having this, if they roll out something that's like, because this is sort of squad based in a sense. I mean, they focus on
well,
a squad of guys.
Well, I guess the narrative focuses on
the
squad.
The narrative does. The gameplay does not, in a sense. But I'm hoping that they don't just have, like, oh, there are these... Like, I'm wondering if the Spartans are just going to be all non, you know, dialogue dudes. Are they all just going to,
like... they're all silent heroes?
Yeah, they're all silent, and they're all just nodding at each other. Like, they, like, go through a room, and they all nod at each other, and then they blow away some fools.
Not again, Master Chief talks. He's no, like, Gordon Freeman or whatever. But, man...
I guess.
A game with, like, four or five silent heroes would be pretty badass.
Yeah, could you imagine that? What if they're just, like, a gang of dudes? Like, they all got their mongooses all, like, specked out. Like, they've all got these... like, very distinct attitudes, but because they don't talk, you only get that through, like, what they do.
I'm just imagining these really awkward moments in, like, the briefing room where the general's like, alright, troops, you're gonna go in and kill some fucking Covenant or whatever.
And
they'll just stare
just
at
pause.
Him.
They just pause,
crickets.
And you're like, yeah, pause.
Well, anyway,
pause.
Guys, your guns are over there.
Yeah.
Just leave when you want, I guess.
Yeah. And then, like, no, even better is if that's just their suits sitting there, and then they come out.
Oh, I didn't know you guys were getting breakfast.
Oh, hey, you're briefing us, but we're not...
What?
We're here. Like, oh, you gotta
didn't
kill some
the
dudes.
Difference.
Anyway.
But yeah. So yeah, I definitely want to see... I want them to do something different for the next one.
Bungie's clearly a talented studio.
Right.
I mean, they've had a lot of time to sort of perfect what they're doing. But I would love to see their talent directed in a new way, you know?
Right.
Like, if Halo Reach is just another Halo-style shooter with a bit of a twist, I'm going to be really let down.
Yeah, but at the same time, I'm probably going to be a bitch who buys it. It sucks.
Yeah, the thing is, Halo is a very good game.
Yeah.
And Halo Reach will undoubtedly be at least somewhat enjoyable.
Yeah.
But, man, I'm going to be a little sad if it's not...
Yeah,
you know, I have to lay this down. I had that feeling with 2 and 3.
Huh.
Going
really?
From 2 to 3, I literally was so unenthusiastic. Now, given at the
wait,
time...
Wait, from 2 to 3? Really?
Yeah. Now, remember, there was the beta. There was the beta that came out that got a taste,
was
that you let you get a taste of it. And I remember being keyed in and interested to that, but literally the coming out of Halo 3 passed without me even really paying attention. Thomas and I really beat Halo 3 a year and a half after it came out. I hadn't gone through the campaign.
Well, the thing is...
Thomas had beaten it way beforehand, but
yeah.
I had not.
Yeah, Thomas and I were kind of really pumped up for that
Halo
game.
Halo 3
yeah.
was a big deal.
Yeah.
We had Mountain... Well, we didn't. Microsoft teamed up with, like, Mountain Dew to make Master Chief, like... flavored soda.
Well, no,
he's flavored?
Not saying...
Really?
Yeah.
Wait, are we talking like Master Chief perspiration here?
Yeah.
It
was
makes
Master
you a
Chief
imbibing his power.
Yeah.
Basically.
Wow.
It's like his plasma.
tastes delicious.
Yeah. I hope. Anyways,
like basically like, what I'm saying is, like,
but that's,
Halo 3 is a huge event.
But that's not what Kyle's saying. Like, he's just saying it wasn't that way for him.
Sure.
Yeah. Like, and I mean, I just wasn't on top of gaming at the time.
Yeah,
and
that's
so, like,
true.
I was distracted and
you were
whatnot.
Sort of on blackout.
But like,
while we
so
were
that,
all
that's
having fun.
So, I mean, maybe it came and went, and that's my own unique event, but I really hadn't been enthusiastic about it. No. I felt like it'd been done. Now, I find it bizarre that now I'm back in the universe, and I was really excited for ODST.
Right.
But I almost feel like I could understand how that fatigue could set in, because mm-hmm. I almost feel like I've had, you know, that sensation before.
Yeah. Let's see, is there anything else I want to talk about with ODST? I mean, obviously, I can't really get into anything with the later levels. And you guys haven't tried Firefight yet, have you?
We did briefly, but I haven't. I can't really say much about it. We
yeah.
played for probably 20 minutes, half hour.
I did play it. I think I've only played it once, actually. But the one time I did play it was with someone else on live, and it was actually surprisingly fun. That was, yeah. Like, I enjoyed myself more than I expected to, because I thought it was sort of like a, you know, this... They kept having media events showing just Firefight.
Sure.
And, like, I don't know, it seemed sort of like they were trying to up the hype for this mode that maybe wasn't as good as, you know, it could be.
Well, what do you think of it?
I had fun with it, and I thought that it could be something that I could go back to maybe, you know, a couple years later, the way that people go back to Halo 3 multiplayer.
Well, that's a pretty impressive
well,
thing to say.
I wouldn't play it over Halo 3 multiplayer. Let's lay that out. But if someone was to say, hey, let's play this Firefight mode, I wouldn't say, like, that's stupid.
But
you're
for a game
baby.
To remain in your consciousness for what you said could be possibly like 2 years, that's saying something. A lot of games
okay,
come
I exaggerated
and go
a bit.
Just a couple months, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But yeah, so it's a good game. One thing that's a bit troubling is this is for Halo fans, and you know this. I beat this game in maybe 6 hours, and then the you know it comes with this multiplayer for Halo 3 with all the DLC, which is beneficial for me since I didn't have any of the DLC. So it's basically like getting Halo 3's multiplayer back again, since I could like play like two or three
plus
modes.
Plus some extra goodies. Yeah.
Yeah. So the purchase value for the game is a lot better for me. I'm wondering, you know, if it's something to suggest to others if they have all of the multiplayer stuff.
Well, you do get
getting
three exclusive maps when you buy ODST. Plus, you get the Firefight mode, and you can get the campaign, which you played solo. But you could also play it again with multiple people with co-op.
Yeah,
and in my opinion, that's where Halo shines. Like, I love playing the co-op campaign.
That's
oh
true.
Oh my god, I'm just looking forward to playing
that's the
co-op.
True. But at the same time, I feel like this game is so different, and it builds up this atmosphere of you being sort of alone, and you're trying to piece together this, you know, story.
Right.
I haven't done co-op yet, but I'm just kind of wondering if it's going to be sort of awkward.
I feel like
awkward.
It's something you would probably tackle after you finish the game solo.
Yeah.
Once you know what the story is all about, you're not going to care about establishing this, you know, solitary atmosphere. You're just going to want to shoot some dudes.
Yeah, see, this is exactly why I suggested you guys play this it solo first before we played co-op.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, that resounding, that you telling us that, I mean, fundamentally changed, I think, the way I will forever perceive the beginning of the game.
That's good. You should play more of that.
Probably.
Both of you.
And with that, I think we should probably wrap it up because we're hitting around an hour 20.
Yeah. All right. Well, hopefully you enjoyed us chatting.
Blither.
And if you have any hate mail for Kyle because he has a bunch of things to hate on.
Yeah, you can send
what
all...
What did I hate on? I just, whoa, I'm ignorant.
I'm just...
All y'all can send destructive criticism to 3bitpodcast@gmail.com.
And we also have a blog on Blogger.
Which
that's
we'll probably
3bit.
We'll figure out how to post that with episode 2. Probably it's not quite set up yet.
Yeah.
In the meantime, please send your emails to 3bitpodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah.
And hopefully we'll talk at you all in a couple weeks.
And just to remind you guys, this is 3Bit, and I'm Kyle Simmerly.
Thomas Curtis.
I'm that dude that sort of hosted this, Peter. So, yeah. Take care, guys.
Bye, Internet. We done?
Yeah.
We're done.